sains, deduktif, aktivis, energi, artis, disco, kopi, astronot, akses, bisnis, Radio Kunci.
You are listening to Radio Kunci, and we are coming to you live from the IFA Gallery Berlin. I am Alia Septi, the director of the IFA Gallery. And IFA, the Institute for Auslandbeziehungen, is doing this exhibition under the title Politics of Sharing. What does it mean to share space, time, experience, practice? How can we share? And here, how can we share institutional space? It is with a great pleasure and honor that we share the institutional space with the collective Kunci. So IFA, as a host, becomes a guest, and our hosts are the member of two members of the Kunci collective, Ferdi and Dina. And for 4 weeks, they will be broadcasting on the Radio Kunci a program with weekly topics around the notion of numpang, about sharing time and space, which is developing itself throughout these 4 weeks of research. Ferdi, it is, I will very briefly introduce you as a host then, and I will leave you then the conversation. You are member of the Kunci Collective. You're doing your PhD at the Freie Universität, an Institute for Social and Cultural Anthropology. Dina, DJ Dina, also a member from the Kunci Collective, and Alex Head from Westline Tuning Network.
Thank you, Alia, for the introduction, and welcome everyone here at the IFA Gallery for the discussion, live discussion tonight, and also for everyone who is listening at home around the world. And maybe I will start by introducing also a bit more information about our guest speaker for today, which is Alex Head. Alex Head is an artist and radio producer who was born in London and currently works in the UK and Berlin. And he produces a lot of radio essays and document research in different contexts, I should say, not only spatially but also themes. In 2015, for instance, he crashed the New York Stock Exchange during a critique of modern labor in collaboration with NTS Radio London and artists Alice Kreischer and Andrea Seichmann. And he is currently working on his opening solo publication called Here Comes Trouble, A Nonlinear History of Art, Magic and Madness as Deviant Knowledge, published by Kunstrepublik ZKU Berlin later in 2016. Welcome, Alex.
Hi, thank you.
And then, like Alia said, we have also here Safia Tudina from Kunci, who will not only help us with the technical details for the current discussion, but also she will take notes and also maybe intervene during our discussion session. Hello, welcome, Dina. Okay, maybe without further ado, maybe we can start. Oh yeah, what is also important about Alex's involvement in the project is also because our past and present collaboration in Wasteland Twinning Network. Wasteland Twinning Network is actually a network that is co-directed together between Alex Head, Will Foster, Matthias Einhoff, and Lars Haya. And if anyone would be interested to know more about what is Wasteland Twinning, please go check out the website at wasteland-twinning.net. And maybe we can start by that particular project where we get to know each other, basically. Could you elaborate more on the stories about Wasteland Twinning?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for the introduction. Wasteland Twinning was established as a parallel platform for research into urban wastelands in 2011, and it's grown to extend into roughly 20 different cities around the world. Researchers operating on their own temporalities. It's occasionally we have the opportunity, like today, to synchronize time and money and being in the same place at the same time. I won't go into too much detail about the ins and outs of Wasteland Twinning because it has so many different participants and so many different veins of inquiry that it's really a large thing to explain, but I would say that it's sympathetic toward the idea of collaborative knowledge production and dialogue around wastelands.
And how did it take you to this whole new research? Because I understand also, like what we screened yesterday, what we broadcast yesterday, this with the conversation with Dina about Adata in Bulgaria. Maybe could you slowly tell us, bridge us to guide us through these stories about why doing research in that data and what does it have to do with wasteland issues in the first place?
Yeah, absolutely. The Adata Island in Plovdiv in Bulgaria is a site which was profiled on the Wasteland website maybe a year ago or 2 years ago now. It became part of a bid with a round of funding to produce a project in six different countries. From that initial interest, Wasteland Twinning was invited to become part of their own bid for the European Capital of Culture. And they were proposing, and to a greater or lesser extent are still proposing, to create a residency center on this island. It's to approach it, to observe it, it's abandoned. It's still in part ownership from private hands and the state. Mm-hmm. And that triggered a series of conversations and eventually a inhabitation on that space on and off for 5 weeks in August of last year.
And then we will run some audio materials that Alex had made in the Adata, but and we will also discuss it more maybe afterwards.
Yeah, this is a set of two sets of commentary during that 5 week period. The first thing you're going to hear is myself on the island on my own, and that will then go into a reflection between me and my assistant William Head on our first week staying there.
Hello. This is my first time back on Adata. First time back on Adata Island after very large storm. I'm just walking along the motorway, which has the pedestrian access on the left, and I've just reached the stairs and I'm turning left and I'm going down. So we've just walked about sort of 50 feet into the island, and at the stone we turn left into the kind of brambles and all kinds of, a whole multitude of plants living, just freely growing for like 30 years. But, like I say, it's actually easier to navigate now because a lot of it has been so drenched that it's fallen over, and I suppose that's also to do with the fact that the ground is really muddy now, whereas before it was so dry your feet went in. Now it's kind of looking a bit like a swamp. I can't wait to see what the studio is looking like. I wonder if people will come and kind of reclaim this wood now that it's become even easier to take it from the island. First mosquito bite. First time we did this, did it with like suitcase, backpack, shopping. I think we have bottles of water with us, me and Will. Stomping through with no idea of where we were going, other than to try and get to the kind of tip to put ourselves away as far from the motorway as possible, and sort of seclude ourselves in that way and kind of feel a bit safer in this unknown environment, which I have to admit, over the month of being here, has never felt any more intimidating as a result of anyone or anything else coming into contact, but only because of changes in our perception of it. Okay, so we're now into what I consider to be one of the most stunning thresholds of the whole island, which is, it's a kind of small opening which leads onto let's just say it's a micro forest of dead upright branches. Not really trees, but like branches. Some of them very thin. I think pretty much most of them dead, undisturbed for a long time, and so they're just sort of standing here like ghosts. Some sort of Louisianan swamp or something. Anyway, it's very beautiful. Something that Will was very attracted to when he was here and made use of, but also kind of always, you know, went this route, like he always took this path to get off the island to get back on. And so it's become the one that I have used to take people here than when they first get here. Now, it's less easy today because there's a tree which has fallen over in the storm and kind of pushed all of these branches in the way, in the path. So that sort of changes things. I mean, we didn't really know.
The idea, I suppose, was so clear, like months and months ago, when you had said, like, yeah, let's go to this island. And when you first said it, I, for some reason, thought it would be off the coast somewhere. We have to get a boat to this island or something like that. And then when you find out it's in the middle of a city, it really changes. It changes from it being like something which is going to be hard to something which could potentially be rather dangerous.
You've got the security of the urban environment in the sense that there are people around, you have a number to call. If everything really went really bad, we could always call the NICAD.
Yeah.
But by the same stroke, you have, you know, all the other people that share that urban environment. And there are people who have quite difficult living situations around us, you know, like that phrase, you know, a cheap holiday in the midst of another's misery is kind of, you know, the border that I don't want to cross with this project because I'm not interested in doing that.
And I
at the same
time,
it's like, well, you're there to kind of contribute to the discussion around the European Cultural Capital in 2019, so it's not like it comes out of nowhere. It's a fun residency.
Is that phrase like meaning that we're there to enjoy that, like to endure that misery, or just to make sure that we don't cross over to the point of enjoyment of someone else's? I mean, I don't think that.
Well, it's just that's the way that your mind can play up against it. It's like, well, what the fuck are we doing here?
Yeah.
You know. And of course, like, I know what we're doing there, and you know what we're doing here, is that we're doing a project, we're doing a funded residency, actually. It's just that there isn't an environment, there isn't a building within which that residency is supposed to happen, so we're changing the idea of what a residency can mean, i.e. to be resident, to squat, to inhabit, as opposed to kind of be an observer and be an outsider.
Pain,
you know, it's a question of integration in a way. And so what we're doing is that we're proposing. In fact, we are integrating ourselves against the kind of, without necessarily having a welcome card. You know, we have a welcome card for the safeties, like for the valuables and that, but we don't have a welcome card to the data. We don't know who those people are. We don't know what's going on around us.
We have to make our own welcome card, and that welcome card was probably the ladder.
Well, that, I was going to say, all right, so that became a process of, like, inhabitation. And it was really, the more you inhabit the space, the more comfortable you feel within the space. And can you get up to the point where you feel actually, like, comfort? And that, like, this is okay. And that was part of the kind of question behind the whole project, and certainly that initial period.
It's Wednesday morning, you're still asleep. All of our stuff is just sitting on the floor. The one thing I really want to do is to get everything off the floor so that we can start to establish, like, what we have. And
basically, when I woke up and looked up, there was the table. you know, a really practical, sturdy, like well-made, you know, table for any different number of uses. And that immediately was a territorial gesture. You know, it's like we're here and we have a place from which to work, or, yeah, way, or a platform onto which.
Yeah, completely a platform
from which to work.
A physical platform to be able to work from, and that at the immediate sense was not how can we create work or how can you create work, but how can we actually like survive being on this island? Like, where are we going to cook food? Where are we going to cut food?
What you heard just now, although it's not too clear, perhaps, was an excerpt from the audio work that Kunci commissioned for Alex had for his research in iData. And basically, the first bit was more about trying to provide a kind of like auditory image of what Adata looked like, but maybe also, Alex, could you relate it also with this idea of publicness of sharing, for instance, like how do you see the site itself or also the kind of activities that's taking place there from this perspective of numpang that we're kind of, yeah, proposing through this project?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think maybe just to, in case people aren't sort of following, because that was maybe a little bit hard to decipher, I was there to do a kind of a self-initiated residency for 5 weeks, which was funded, but not official insofar as there wasn't anywhere to do a residency yet. So it became a project that was really about inhabitation and what it means to inhabit a potentially hostile environment, and whether or not it'll be possible to produce new knowledge in the way that I would in an artistic studio, in another environment, in an architectural, in a building. Mm. So that was really my kind of starting point. And I think it, within the context of sharing, there's a kind of inversion that takes place, which is to say that from a distance, I think we were talking about this yesterday, Dina and I, from a distance, it's the kind of place where you can project an idea of it being a public park and being in some way made available for other people, being open to the public. Mm. Of course, in the condition that it's in at the moment, the closer you get to that space, the less you want to worry about sharing with other people. I mean, the last thing you really want to be doing, to be honest, is encountering other people in that environment. Yeah. So that is part of the reality of the site at the moment. And I think in terms of going on or thinking about conversations that lead to a more public use, those things have to be sort of traversed as well, you know. So that idea of sharing isn't just this kind of nice, perhaps socialist idea around sharing, but, you know, sharing is also with some kind of expectation in return as well. And I think that
it's like more take and give kind of situation.
Yeah.
But it's also kind of like a very modern take on public space as well, I guess. Because, like, I know in Indonesian context, we'll also maybe hear about it a little bit more later, but that we don't really have this understanding of, like, private and public, like, this dichotomy is so strong. It's more about there's an open space, basically, and then you have different people coming in and out of that space and then trying to carve out like their own space with it, but together in that sense. That's where this sharing comes in. Mm. That's not necessarily something that is, it's interesting because like there's no take and give really take place there. It's just about how people kind of like position themselves within an open space and try not to, like, sometimes they kind of collide in each other, like these private or individual spaces through interactions or maybe through some fights or maybe through kind of like colloquial stuff or like friendly stuff. But most of the time, people were just trying to kind of like live or inhabit the space together. Or,
yeah, that's. I think that's really interesting. I mean, I think that there is, We can talk about even a sort of a stigma that's attached to sharing, insofar as I feel that sharing at its very base is as a public act. I feel that one doesn't share with one's immediate family and the very close people, one's partner. You don't question, you don't sort of think, I'm going to share this with you. You just are living with one another, and it's a different type of, it's almost an emotional economy which is going on there, rather than a material one. And I think that that kind of can be exaggerated or can be amplified to the point of a stigma insofar as the idea of having to share one's home, being homeless, is a really, it does carry a high level of stigma with it. And so perhaps that's part of my own take on the concept of sharing in the first place, is that I see it as, you know, this kind of public-private partnership. That's the model which I can imagine people will adopt in Adata if they, I mean, I think it's the one they'll be forced to adopt if they want to work towards it being a park or...
I understand that also you collect some stories from Adata. Do you think it's possible also to try to listen to what Antoinetta
Toplova is a really fascinating architect. That I suppose we're going to hear part of her story, as it were, but she was very active, and there's a wonderful cyclical nature to meeting her, because she was very active in a project that stood up against the socialist dictatorship during that part of Bulgaria's history, and she actually used the argument of UNESCO to effect the preservation of a certain part of the city. So UNESCO is what brought us into contact with Adata in the first place.
Okay, so we are going to hear Alex interviewing Antoinetta Toplova.
I just thought maybe I should say a little bit about what I've been doing. I'm particularly interested in the ways in which the Adata has been understood in the past and the way it's understood now.
This island had always been part of the city, although quite apart from the city, and it had been existed even in the past more as a promise than as an actual being, and it's not foreseen now, neither in the past, as a possible island like the one in
Budapest,
neither such kind of islands as they exist in Paris or Budapest. According her knowledge and her research of the city, the island had never been actively used.
There's a couple of places where there are kind of like small rings of trees. There's kind of two of those, as far as I can tell. And it makes me feel like that's planted, that it's deliberate.
After the 9th of September 1945, those who governed the city had started having ideas how to make the place sociable. And then the first plans for making the island park-like had been started. After the correction of the floor of the river had been made and the bridge constructed, the possibility to reach the island had been made. Because after making the river look like as it is looking now, it had not been easy to go to the island with a boat. So now the idea of the government, the local government, had been to use the bridge and then the stairs to go down. There had been an idea when the fair had been made, and because it was the biggest fair in Bulgaria, the only one international, when it had been made the first and so on, so it had been a big thing for the city. There had been a plan to make a pedestrian bridge from the fair to the island, just as a...
The international fair on the other side.
Yes.
Yeah. That's so interesting.
Siaro, what you call it. So the idea to have a second pedestrian bridge was to connect the island with the international fair and, of course, to reach the other part of the CTD neighborhood at that. Although it had those stairs, as you know them, the island had never managed to become a vivid place for free time. For some time it had been used in the 70s, in the early 70s, yes, as a nude beach during the summer time. So, but it had never been regulated and stated as such. Okay. It just had been recognized from those spontaneously. In the 80s, there had been one big plan beside the Kapana district and the hills, which had been recognized as special zones and parks and so on. And the Kapana, which architect Topalova had stated and promoted as a special art district, a third strength or path had been thought of, and it was connected with the data, the island to be made with an amphitheater, to be full of open spaces for city culture. Pools, outdoor pools, youth sports, and so on. But this had been asked to be done from the municipality, so the architects had made the plans, but no one had fulfilled that. Everything ended with a big exhibition of the plans and the possible future. Nowadays, when the international fair had gone private in the bigger part of the ownership, the owner of the international fair had an idea to make the island part, but only of the fair, not to be connected with the other side. So to find a way to attract it as an attraction of the international fair. Mm. But this has also not been...
I mean, you know, my godmother is from former Czechoslovakia, and she always has a very, I think, a very balanced relationship to that period, in the sense that, you know, she says that after capitalism came in, you know, people don't just, they just don't tell the same amount of jokes at parties anymore. They became more serious, which of course is a joke. So she's only being so serious about that herself. But, you know, I think I don't see it as being this kind of binary, you know, good and bad. Okay, maybe like my last question would be, particularly in the context of this idea of commoning, which I think is really part of international conversation within arts and architecture now. A lot of people in the kind of post-economic crisis are revising these kinds of ideas. And I understand that there was a kind of a commoning process that you were part of in the Kapana district in order to kind of save the architecture there. And I wondered if maybe you could talk a little bit about that and maybe about the strategies that you used. I'm really interested in how that possibly worked.
75
is the year when UNESCO promoted the year for preservation of historical heritage.
Yeah.
And this coincided with the plans for Kapana. So it was a good coincidence that exactly at that moment Europe and the world had pointed out the importance of cultural heritage seen in an urban area. The team, екипа ви беше само професионалисти, не от обществен.
Ние започнахме от професионалисти и след това стана големи екип на младите интелектуалци на Пловдив.
The team had been started at the beginning. There were only professional architects. Then, after promoting the general UNESCO idea, the Kapana had gathered
as an initiative, the young intellectuals of the city during that period,
journalisti, pisateli,
writers, journalists,
mladi,
artists, mladi, all of them young, and
muzikanti,
musicians,
philosophers,
a team of 20 people, which was the core of the team. So, besides the very architectural plan, that artistic team, that artistic core had made a film for the process of making the plan for the possible future of the neighborhood. And the film had been presented on a festival. Mm-hmm. And then it had gained quite an attention at that moment, and the journalists had put the necessary informational assistance.
И за щастие общо взето на тази идея, защото имаше човек, който начинание проект изгледа.
And luckily, there had been someone in the big hierarchy of that period. Someone had seen and had heard and had understand the idea of that core artistic, and had made it possible for the destruction of the neighborhood and to be stopped, and the new buildings to be stopped to be built. And
okay, so it's done through a media, so it's done essentially through a campaign and a film.
Може да кажем, че в крайна сметка се случило благодарение на кампания, на филм, на медиите.
Благодарение на това, че имаше движение, съзнание или група, която пива, и времето, което подпомогна. Хора и време.
Time and people coincided. People who were willing to give very...
Добра идея и...
To give information of a very good idea and a good time when the world at that moment.
От времето на моя баща, 45-50 години, много хубави идеи по археологическото и друго наследство потънаха.
Because, for example, in the 50s, 1950s, there had also been very good ideas, and her father, who is a sculptor, had been part of many such kind of themes, who had proposed many good variants for the future of the city, but the time had not been...
И сега е много хубаво, има ги хората, и времето е добро, действие.
So now, again, it's such kind of a moment, you are here, and people like you. The tendency of the time is also to point out the importance of preserving and reviving, and probably if we have in mind the situation in the city, we can say that maybe it's a good time.
Желая успех и съветвам да не се отказвате.
And she wishes you good luck and not to give up your ideas.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much.
Агата си струва.
Агата worth the attention and the time and the people.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Really. Thank you.
Good luck.
Okay, that's another excerpt from Alex Head's Adata files, which actually we will run the whole complete version tomorrow around 3, Saturday, around 3 p.m., was it?
Yeah, the files will be in the day, and the commission Adata, which is a much more experimental piece, will be Saturday evening at 6, at Dina, yeah.
But, I mean... with Antonieta, from her story, I learned that, I mean, there are a lot of different stakeholders to this particular space. And I don't know, maybe you've mentioned this briefly before, but how do you see yourself within this kind of increasing interest, actually?
Yeah.
Especially you coming from, I mean, different, let's say, national cultural background.
Yeah, I'm very sensitive to my own role within the conversations that are happening around the island. And part of that responsibility is tied up with gathering information and gathering opinions. And another part of that is to do with the way in which those opinions are represented and my own presence is represented. So I took the decision very early on to represent my time there through drawings and continue with the radio format, because I found that it's a way of treading lightly within delicate legal environments.
But was your involvement there kind of like people like expecting you to come up with kind of like outcome or results that...
I think that my relationship with cultural content around the Adata Island took a turn during my stay in the city. I think to begin with, I was primarily concerned with sort of issues of survival and issues of comfort that I've touched on in terms of proposing it as a studio space. I think as I enter into more conversation with the European Capital of Culture and the Foundation 2019, I am aware that there is an expectation. But at the moment, that expectation is around cultural production, and I haven't yet met anyone who is committed to doing anything other than discussing it,
okay.
I have to say. Yeah. So we shall see, I think. I mean, without creating any more fog, I'm sympathetic with the idea of it being turned into a public space, but I don't think I'm the person to make that kind of campaign.
And how are you seeing it in the future? I mean, for your own practice, like, do you have plans yet? Like, what is your next plans after this?
Yeah, my plan at the moment, and the conversation I'm happening at the moment with people in Plovdiv, is to create a radio play around using the different owners and the different contested parties for the island as characters. And I guess I'll cast myself as a kind of militant philosopher within that.
Alex, the militant philosopher. And we will have a question and answer session later, also with our listeners through Twitter, Editor Kunci, and also with the live audience here at the IFA Gallery.
Science, deductive, activis, energy, artis, disco, copy, astronaut, access, business, Radio Kunci.
Okay. Yeah, and then in the second bit, maybe... we don't really plan it as a kind of like comparison, but maybe just to kind of give an idea, like a different context in Indonesia, based on what Kunci did in, well, since 2011, was it, Dina? That we are working together with the community. Let's say a community of inhabitants of wasteland in one corner of Yogyakarta, where Kunci is based, and I think Alex hasn't been there, but some of the wasteland twinning explorers like Lars Heyer also kind of visited Yogyakarta like 2013. But since 2011, there have been a lot of changes that's been happening. And then in the following, there will be a kind of like audio materials, which is based on the conversation that I had in the past with Rebecca Bernard from Wasteland Twinning Nottingham. About because at that time Ledak Timoho was kind of like twinned with the island,
in fittingly named island.
The island in Nottingham. And this is just an excerpt that we kind of like enacted a couple of days ago with Leilani Hermiasi. Just to give you an idea of what Ledok Timoho is through like some kind of like audio imagery. To briefly describe Ledok Timoho, the land is situated near Gajah Wong River, approaching the eastern border of the city of Yogyakarta. The area filling the western promontory of the river is occupied by some 30 semi-permanent houses with around 70 families of people of the streets living there since around 2000. In addition, there's also a smaller group of farmers at the southern corner of the site who have been settling there for a longer time. They are the so-called the original dwellers of Ledok Timoho. The location is surrounded by housing projects with a 1 meter wide cemented alley as the single gateway into the site tucked in between a row of houses. On the eastern side lies the river of Gajah Wong and the abandoned Gajah Wong II bridge, which was built in 1996 until 1997. The bridge, which was supposed to connect over the natural border separating the city district and Bantu region, i.e. the river, has remained unusable since the city plan to install the connecting road has been frozen for nearly 15 years. When the abandoned bridge was built in mid-90s, the real estate housing projects have already been mushrooming around the area. Some say that the Ledok Timoho community was started by the bridge. Soon after the construction of the bridge was finished in 1998, two families took over the semi-permanent cabins which were left by the workers. In 2009, the inhabitants of Ledok Timoho conducted a self-funded refurbishment program over the area by rearranging their own living quarters and developing basic public facilities such as mosque and common toilet. Up until now, local authorities have been refusing to give formal recognition to the inhabitant status, although they claim that they give moral support to the community members. This is due to the Ledok Timoho land status, which is still in dispute. In the eyes of the state apparatus, the land remains empty of people. As a result, people living in Ledok Timoho are denied of administrative access, including some basic health and social welfare services from the government.
So, taking your seat for a minute, Ferdy, perhaps I could ask you a couple of questions from your extensive research into the Ledok. I think one of the things that I'm interested in is the types of people that find themselves living in these kinds of informal situations, and the extent to which, certainly, you know, in the Berlin context, you have the Tipi-Dorf down by the Kupernika wasteland, and certainly I know that some people living there have more of a lifestyle decision around it, which is to say that they actually have a flat. So maybe you could talk about if there's any differentiation, how people find themselves in the Ledok.
Well, it's totally coming out of a different, at least economic context also, because like as I mentioned in the audio recording just now, that most people who are living there, basically they are people living on the streets and off the streets. Like so the idea of kind of like inhabiting or occupying this particular location is actually out of necessity, because well, maybe for a bit of context, in Jogja now they're like, especially under like the current mayor, there's this huge amount of market interest and like investment, and also like areas are Well, I won't describe it as gentrified, but there's a lot of investment. So a lot of people from out of town actually buy land just for the sake of investment. They just wait for things to happen.
Yeah.
And for us at Kunci, because I don't really have the like your bravery, Alex, of going to a particular
bravery
location.
Bravery and stupidity is a very thin line, but yeah.
But yeah, we always try to engage with this particular site. One, like, through different initiatives. Second is two different people as well, and also two different approaches. We were quite sensitive about this particular issue because there are a lot of interests actually already building up in a space, not only from developers, but also even like academics and social activists, and kind of, I mean, they come with good intention of trying to make research or try to document, or some like students came and they make a report out of the living condition there. But there's, I mean, since the community has been around since like 2000s, and a lot of this knowledge that is accumulated in the site with the people doesn't really go back there. Like when we came there in 2000, like 11 years later, when we came there, there's a lot of skepticism coming from the community members, and they were like very kind of like, they don't trust us basically. And why should they?
For good reason.
Exactly.
Because
I think for now it's been 4 years that we've been doing things there on and off. I mean, when I initiated it in 2011, actually it was part of Westland Twinning Project. Mm. But actually, as you will hear a bit more later, there's a lot more going on since then. And Dina was there also with a team of artists and also researchers and also geographers. So maybe I can also give you a bit of a description of what Kunci has been doing there. Our engagement in Ledok Limoho came in different waves. Our project began in 2011 as a part of the Wasteland Twinning Project. We called the project the Bonsuwong Project. During this time, the so-called positive activities that I mentioned before are somewhat declining. Conflict started to rise between older and newer residents. Affinities are formed based on ethnic and religious affinities. Or simply put, classic power dynamics that predominates life elsewhere in the city began to reemerge in the location. However, the residents also started to feel the negative impact of reproducing this old power balance within this community, as they no longer appear as a community with a strong sense of solidarity. This eventually could jeopardize their common attempt to gain recognition from authorities and also from their local surroundings. In the Bonsuwong project, we were introduced by the community leader as Tim Dokumentasi, or Documentation Team. Because of that, we managed to gain access to interview and collect archive materials that have been made in the course of time about Ledok Timoho. Surely, we are not the first initiative who conducted research and wished to engage with Ledok Timoho community members due to their subversive position within Yogyakarta urban context. But at the same time, many of the research results do not circulate back into the community, as they are published in limited circles only, such as in academic journal, bachelor thesis, or student field reports. While the frequent exposure to research activities may contribute to the community members' ennui in accepting yet another research initiatives, in what is practically their living environment. The open-ended nature of Bonsu as an artistic exploration granted us opportunities to develop a more participatory forms of engagement. So instead of coming in with a theoretical prescription and strategies to how community members should perform and do together in order to survive as a entity, we work in reverse. We try instead to open up a space for sharing and learning together, not only between community members, but also with us as the outsiders. In these activities also, we share about ways to inhabit a space and how we relate to the wasteland as a living space. This approach enables us to see more alternatives, often overshadowed by everyday politics and network of necessities, in viewing what constitutes the place we call home, while at the same time it helps us unravel the subtle power play in micro situation. In doing so, not only that, we will be able to accumulate existing knowledge about how people inhabit wastelands as a community, but it also reintroduces them to reflective modes of how certain spaces are inhabited while generating different power relations. In the long run, as urban development projects continue to be blinkered with social fabrics of everyday life, at stake is not only understanding about how we can maintain access over certain spaces, but what we can do if we lose that access, thus setting us to deal with a whole new set of relations and challenges in placemaking elsewhere. As a long-term project which problematizes notions of emptiness in Indonesian urban wasteland, Bonsuung's focus has gradually evolved from trying to provide descriptive accounts on the ongoingness of life on a precarious ground to collaborative attempts with the people living there in nurturing endurance to homestead amidst illegalizing discourse of their whereabouts. As for the most recent Kunci's project in Redok Timoho, beginning July 2013, we are joined by a team of artists, social workers, and oral historians who are working together with a group of youth inhabiting the wasteland in an activity called Hack History. Hack History is a collaboration with youth on memory, historical translation, and violence in Indonesia. This project is a response to the grim political history of Indonesia, especially related to the events where mysterious shootings are targeting mainly urban poor men, which happen in many regions in the country. In the case of Redok Timoho, we try to work with this memory and violence issue by working together with the youth there to creatively produce historical narratives of their place in reflection to the disenfranchisement, violence, and illegalization engendering the discourse of wasteland. In parallel to that, also starting in 2013, several artists involved in Kunci's Made in Commons project are also increasingly taking interest in the community living in Redok Timoho. Made in Commons is a series of experiments on commons as categories in the making by ways of doing things together and exploring what we have in common. For instance, one of the participants of the project, Rotterdam-based artist Simon Kentkens, worked together with a group of children in around September 2014. Together with the children, they speculate the uses, meaning, and possible futures of the bridge, which is located at the very end of the compound area. Meanwhile, Jogja visual artist Satu Lagi, for instance, also worked with the youth in Redok Timoho by working on what Simon Kentens found in the Redok Timoho by examining notions of spatial and visual orientation through drawing workshop on viewpoint. Yeah, I mean, I mean, maybe as a note, the Made in Commons is actually also the project that Dina curated. Maybe you want to share a bit of process of what happening in that intervention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, as what you you have discussed earlier about this illegal notions imposed on a wasteland, we found ourselves also in a very sticky position as curator, as artist, as activist coming to this community, which we cannot really give a fixed answer what we are we will offer to them, because as Ferdi said, there are many interests or many actors has been involved in this wasteland, and most of them are NGO, and they have like this mission. The mission is to get to help them get, for example, legal ID card, because most of them they don't have an ID card. And when they ask us, so Miss Curator, what you will offer to us? And I said, knowledge production. And they said, in what sense? What is the form of this knowledge that you offer us? And I found it like, no, actually I want to understand from you, learning from you how to organize yourself, organize ourselves outside of these state regulations, and which then I found myself talking for 30 minutes about why state regulation is unfair, it's problematic. And so, yeah, this idea of our what kind of language and how to translate our intentions or our ideas to community, to wasteland, like that, I found it, yeah, quite problematic at this project, which I don't think I found the solution yet. I'm, as what Alex said, being very cautious about our position as someone who come there. Yeah. But I don't know.
Yeah, but also maybe it wasn't clear at the beginning because it started in the middle of the recording.
Should we play it again?
No, it's okay. I mean, the full version will also be run later on. But I was describing one of the challenges, I think, doing this there. As I told you that it was since 2000, so you have this different wave of incoming people in different generation. Basically, you have the early inhabitants and earlier inhabitants, and you have the later ones. And somehow, when we went there in 2011, already there's this new power asymmetries are emerging between older in that sense, in like the kind of like the ones who were there first. And then the one who's just coming in, and then kind of reproduce this, hierarchy again, about in dealing with city spaces, basically, and trying to kind of like regulate the space, then also reproducing this stigma that you were mentioning about it has to do with ethnicity, it has to do with certain cultural backgrounds, yeah. Why certain people couldn't come in, why couldn't certain people shouldn't be let to stay, why shouldn't certain people are disrupting the kind of peace that they, or the harmony that they have there, or you know.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we're very careful of making general statements between these incredibly differentiated places, but I think that certainly, wastelands have got a kind of a cultural signification as being in some way sort of ambiguous. But when you come into contact with them in an empirical fashion, that ambiguity sort of disappears quite quickly, and it becomes actually spaces have got real, real issues at hand, and real, you know, it's not ambiguous when you don't have another option, I suppose, what I'm trying to say. So, in a sense, there's an interest in this. You know, I'm interested in this sort of ambiguity around wastelands and how they function within the collective imagination of the city as a whole. But perhaps what it is that we do when we kind of get together and compare notes is that we start to encounter some of the more material and legal realities of those spaces.
Yeah, thank you for reminding me about that. That because maybe wasteland is also quite a specific urban formation also. Because in Indonesia, you don't really have, or in Java, or in Jogja, where I come from, it's more like empty space, we name it. But thank you for reminding me about this idea of ambiguous spaces, which is kind of like everything is not clear. And maybe also that's why it has the characteristic of public, but it's not necessarily so, like not, exactly. Not necessarily the case. Yeah, it's not as straightforward as how we imagine public space in European contexts, for instance.
For a reminder, maybe for the people who are joining us, and to reframe the whole discussion, so it's within politics of sharing, and the topic of this week is the publicness of space sharing, and it comes. We have been trying through this conversation to address some questions, which are how space sharing can lead to a communal organization of resources and land ownership, and how our notion of ownership and common use being shaped through the Numpang. And as a reminder for the Numpang, it's this idea of sharing a space, sharing time, sharing a living, which is evolving through time. So if you have any question, I would like to start with one question, because when I was listening to both experience, there was a part that I found really interesting is, aside from the ideal of sharing, comes the point, last week we touched the topic of the vulnerability of the sharing, and this week we are touching also the topic of the expectation. But when sharing is a necessity, and Alex, with your example, when you were talking with sharing with your closest circle, with your family, and Ferdi, when you were talking about the Ledoc experience, did you experience expectation? What are the difference on the expectations?
I feel that the whole experience in Adata was a wonderful affirmation of the goodwill of a stranger, you know, of people given a certain amount of respect and given a sort of a genuine level of interest and a genuine piece of research. So only 2 days before I got there did a safe house in which to kind of have my electronic things and take a shower actually become available. And I felt, of course, incredibly appreciative of that at the time. But on reflection, I feel that actually, you know, there's always a trade-off with these kind of magical experiences, and that idea that sharing has a built-in expectation with it isn't necessarily negative either. I mean, I think, you know, like David Graeber would call it the sort of baseline communism that underpins the way in which all exchanges and all kind of societies have operated historically. And so to go back to the island now with that in mind, I feel that I'm comfortable to do that, providing that I keep an eye on the consequences of my knowledge production, the consequences of my being there. You know, so to enjoy that space and to kind of treat it as something which is essentially open, but to feel that there's a kind of a responsibility that comes with that, you know, and that's a responsibility to the city, I think.
Yeah, I think also that point is very important, because, like, as I mentioned before about this reproduction of conflict or power relation, it's something that somehow got lost in the process of community making, oftentimes. Because if you really want to like put it like, I mean, clearly, even now, until now, their status is still in dispute, like because they could not access ownership to the space or to the particular site that they're living in now, because it's never really clear who owns the space, and then there are some loopholes in like city regulation that said that if community members could perform or could show that they can make use like of the space productively for a certain period, I think it's like around 20 years, then actually at least they can have the rights to use it officially. But towards that performance, I mean, towards that, to be able to stay within a community within 20 years is already a big challenge, of course, one. And then the second is, how do you document it? How do you make an archive about it? How do you present this to not only the government but also your local surroundings? And actually, when we came there the first time, their expectation was quite clear. They want us to kind of like advocate this effort, like provide help us to kind of find the real owners, go inside all this archive research, archive centers, and try to find. And then, if you can also go to the court and try to write try to do the paperwork for us, which is not within our capacity because we are more of researchers. So what we kind of not promise or offer them, but kind of like just share that to them that actually we're not in that capacity to give you all that, but we are researchers, we are working with archives, and we know photographers, we know video makers. Maybe also we can start to work on that towards that performance, or the building of that archive or knowledge that Dina was saying about, so that at the end of the day, when they fulfill all these materials, maybe they can actually own the space. But also that comes another question: and what happened after that? Will they also do what everyone else is doing in terms of, so they stop sharing their space or not? That's also questionable process.
It reminds me of a conversation when you were talking about this length of time, these 20 years that are necessary to prove and to change the kind of ownership. Mm-hmm. With the project that you are making on Dina on the time as a currency. Would you like to talk a little bit about this?
I must say that my mind is a bit blank now because after all this chaotic of moving from one platform of recording to another application, so yeah, I'm now considering maybe I should not make a radio project, but it's another
live
thing.
On air.
Or not live, like we can record it and we will play it live later. Anyway, I don't have the idea to create or to experiment on on time as a currency. It's not yet proven to be successful to give any of outcome, because when I suggest this idea to our working group, the idea of time within in our city in Yogyakarta, in Java, I cannot say in Indonesia, but at least in our city, time is very much something considered as an abundance. Like if we thinking of time, maybe to put it like this, we're thinking of time like a water, tap water, that you keep it open and until your sink is full, and then yeah, it's we have more time. We always have time. So the idea that currency is something that is so limited that you can use it for an exchange to others, like for example gold, you cannot have gold from trees or from the streets, or gold is something that you have to work and then you get it as a reward. But time is something that we think we always have it, and so the idea to use time as an exchange value, it's very hard in this kind of like setting, mind setting. But we are working on the idea actually of time as a space arrangement to share, and also, but at the end it also become a currency itself, because within the community in the Ladok, Timoho, the community that we mentioned, that we discussed today, it's always also in this give and take, that okay, they give me 30 minutes of their life by hanging out with me in the afternoon, and then they expect me to give also around 30 minutes or 1 hour to help them clean the house, or joining the collective cleaning day of the community. So but it's not something that you cannot grasp. They're asking for my 30 minutes to help them cleaning their house, but it's more like expressing their feeling, like texting me saying, hey, we're going to clean the roads tomorrow, can you come? If I said no, they say okay, it's okay, but I will be stamped as a someone who always cannot come. So this kind of expectations and expressing feelings is also something that we've been discussing in the idea of numpang, that the exchange or the transactions is not really verbally express, communicate, but it's something that you fill in along the way.
Yeah, I mean, it's
about time as well, right?
Yeah.
Can you also tell us a bit about it?
Closer.
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring it up, because I also have a first-hand experience of the complications that can arise around, you know, as it were, the currency of an idea. So, you know, I was involved in a project last year which was also setting up a time bank at the Center of Art and Urbanistic in Moabit. And what we found, so Yolanda Tott and Leah Bergau and Raphael Polo, the four of us were working to establish a time bank, but also with the additional complication that it would be a platform for cultural discussion and artistic production. So we brought in these very different, I think, in retrospect, very different value systems within the art world and the kind of left liberal ideal of time exchange, and all of this is tied together in under the guise of a kind of anti-capitalism, or at least an alternative, a localized alternative to capitalism. And that was complex from the beginning, insofar as I suggested that we start off the initial sort of survey to collect interest and people's data, and with a lottery. So we held a lottery, a time bank lottery, at Christmas time, and basically the lottery cards You can find this stuff on my website as well. The lottery cards were kind of surveys. So you were offering people a sort of standard lottery ticket with a bit that you kept for yourself and a bit that you gave back to the organizers. But somehow the bit that you gave back to the organizers was a kind of an A5 page with a series of questions. So it's slightly, but everyone knew what they were getting involved in, and we got a lot of response and we got a lot of interest. But in the end, perhaps the opposite of what you encountered was that actually we didn't think we had enough time to do the logistics, to organize all of the bureaucracy and the administration that came with that project. And so that also came to a non-conclusive end. Ideas do change the world, but not in the way you expect them, Adam Curtis, you know?
Okay, thank you, Alex. Maybe also from the audience at Tifa Gallery, if anyone have anything to comment or ask. No one?
No one asked question as well in Facebook and Twitter.
Yeah, because it's also quite late now in Indonesia, I guess.
Oh, that's true.
Kann ich es auf Deutsch sagen oder soll ich es auf Englisch sagen? I try first in English. If I fail, I proceed in German. Thank you very much for your contributions and your talks. I find these ideas very interesting, and of course sharing is something everybody finds sympathetic and likes to share. We have a lot of sharing associations in Berlin here where people share abilities or things or services. But what I ask myself is, why do we, who don't have too much, always talk about sharing, but don't ask those who have a lot of money, space, time, resources, etc., to share with us?
Thank you for the question. It's a good one, actually. But
I mean, I don't know that that's necessarily true. I mean, I think that actually there are a lot of instances where people have used particularly wastelands to ask exactly that question of the state and to try and engineer spaces which are being used by the public informally that are due to be formalized and built upon to be translated into public parks, like the Park Fiction in Hamburg, for example, the Hitsteenhoofd in Amsterdam, and there are other examples. But I think perhaps part of the reticence to ask that question and speak directly to power is that historically you can see what happens when that takes place, and it basically becomes formalized and it loses something in that transition, I think. And Ferdy and I were talking about this a little earlier, like what is it that happens when a space is formalized? And perhaps, Ferdy, you want to talk a little bit about that idea that you can't formalize everything.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of space, this kind of activities that's going on. First, I'm going to touch on the informal parts, where people kind of like occupy like blank spots or wastelands, and then you have an accumulation of activities there, and then somehow it attracts interest, not only, I mean, at the beginning by users, dog walkers, tourists, and then you have the developer coming, starting to look at, like, why is it so interesting, and then you have this city government coming and see, like, and then they kind of try to take it over and then develop it, and then, yeah, I mean, at the same time also as this new attention is being made, or as this new powerful elites are zooming their attention to certain locations in the city, and then it grows, and then it got gentrified. You have the different notions for that also in Jogja. At the same time, other places are being abandoned. Like, I don't know, I'm thinking now about how, I'm not an expert in urban development in Berlin, but maybe you see less interest in Kreuzberg as it was in early 2000s, as a lot of more people are more interested now in Neukölln area, for instance.
May I ask a second question? Mm. I appreciate your answer, but perhaps I should express myself a bit more aggressive. Mm-hmm. I think it's very honorable to do research about wasteland and people who are forced to inhabit wasteland and make it something else than wasteland. But I think it's more necessary to do some research about the rich, which are quite more difficult to approach. But I think what we have experienced with Panama Papers and so on is that there's still a lot of research to do and a lot to share. And if we start, for example, to do research about Besitz, sorry, I can't find the English word at the moment, and taxes that get lost, a lot of repair could be started, and perhaps a lot of help could be founded or whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm only speaking for myself, but I do recognize this shift that certain people within the intellectual left have described as the shift from the new left to the few left. And I do unfortunately think that there is an apathy within groups of people that would perhaps 20 or 30 years ago have become more directly engaged in politics and the struggle for space. And I think that there's, again, from my own position, but I think that there's a sort of a dislocation through various different effects of digitized information and so on with material space itself. And I don't think, and I know that it took me a while to recognize the virtue and the value of space and of occupation. If you're going to have a space to speak from, if you're going to have a position to speak from, sharing on Facebook isn't going to be the same thing, you know? And so I think that I completely agree, and it's about trying to get those different struggles to speak to each other, you know, like the critique of high finance. But I also think that if I think about my work in terms of 10, 15, 20 years, people need the tools with which to begin those kinds of conversations and to understand what it is perhaps that's at risk or what's already been lost or the virtue and the value of reclaiming even the struggle itself. I totally hear what you're saying. I think it's a valuable question. I just think that somehow we're at a place now where, maybe in a way like that debate has been relegated to like at the academies and, you know, like pirate radio stations, sadly.
I know that I should have taken notes, but I failed in fulfilling my needed task. But yeah, I want to also respond to your question. What I've experienced working with this community of illegal, so-called illegal inhabitants of the wasteland in Yogyakarta. I do believe that my research together with them, it is part of research to so-called attacking the privilege or the rich, for example, because through the research that I did and I still do with them, we found how various we experienced that our definitions of rich and poor are not enough for now, and it is also a way to understand the value system that creates this definition. For example, like this, in this community of Ledok Timoho, I told Alex this story yesterday. They have a school for children, so from the age of 1 to 5, a kindergarten. And it's a free kindergarten. All the children go there, and they have volunteers from university teach there. And they are quite famous in the city. Even the wife of the Sultan went there to visit them and to see, oh, how successful. Yeah, Sultan is the king of Yogyakarta. And Yogyakarta is still governed by the Sultan, who is also our governor. So it's another context of a city. Anyway, so this school is very famous, and then the initiator of the school was invited to a national television for a famous talk show. And this talk show was, in this talk show, he was asked to say how this school has been successful in creating education for the poor people. But during that night when this show was aired, one of the mother in this community sent text to my friend, who is also in our working group, saying that, hey, turn on your television now. You can see how poverty sells. This woman, she's housewife, but she's also very critical towards how they were put in a certain categories, and there are some groups in the community who wants to preserve this category of poor people. So I think what I find interesting in this research together with them is this, how to believe that what we thought of person under these poor categories, they also have the agency to think and to do action upon or for themselves. I lost my train of thought, but maybe Ferdi can help me as usual.
Yeah, a bit. But my question, I think my short answer is for us, especially at Kunci, I think it's kind of useless to empower the rich. I mean, they all have all the power, and they have all the access, and they're not doing anything about it to share. So we prefer working also in the middle ground, at least if not up to the top. Sorry, at the back you have a question.
Thank you for a fantastic conversation, and I just wanted to kind of address the lady's question and what you just said that, and I would add that it's no point in kind of naming and shaming the rich anymore, because we found that they've got rhino hides, and you cannot somehow that whole process of that we've collectively failed in doing that. Mm-hmm. But however, the fact that when you say wasteland, the word itself is kind of interesting, because you know, terra nullus, you know, where nothing happens, because there's nothing, it's outside the zone, so-called, other things can happen. And when someone was, I think, mentioning about like doing a radio play, narrativizing or particularizing an area which has been before called a wasteland, is perhaps also a kind of a subversive process of actually showing the sterility of richer landscapes, you know, like when you were talking about like how neighborhoods kind of, you know, get polished off and people move to other neighborhoods, people moving from, say, did you mention like Neukölln, right? Moving from like Wilmersdorf to Neukölln, because there are like a lot of conversation about sterility and so particularizing of the so-called these wastelands, which kind of, you know, bring them out. And I think when you're talking about like sort of, you know, poor people have an imagination. Well, yes, of course. Like the thing is that, but I mean, my experience in Bangladesh, for example, is that to an extent in India, is that they're phenomenally inventive. There's a lot of invention going on in these landscapes, and which makes that world very rich and very teeming, very fecund. So I feel like if some of this research can actually find itself through narrative, so some kind of, you know, like a popular representative of like sort of, you know, narrativize, I think then, you know, often we wonder what happens behind those closed doors, these how vast landscape which we had once called wasteland. Well, for me, I mean, a lot of what I see which are not called wasteland are quite waste, because they're like very sterile. Like I find Neukölln very sterile, very uniform, very homogenous, very quite lily white, and also sort of, you know, segregated. And therefore, you know, so I think the narrativity, the drama, the radio drama that one of the participants mentioned, and sort of details of these sort of, you know, the that's sort of, I think, is a fantastic way to actually subvert this. No questions.
Thank you for that comment.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, it's interesting you say we don't know what goes on behind closed doors with relationship to the wasteland, because actually the whole idea with the radio play is to dramatize what goes on behind closed doors in the government and in the private hands that control it, and then contrast those two things. And there's a particular detail that I wanted to add about Plovdiv, is that it's regarded as the oldest city in Europe, 7,000 to 8,000 years old, and is littered with Roman ruins. And that touches on perhaps the kind of cultural contradiction of this word wasteland that you've so perfectly highlighted, in that these ruins are sometimes just lying around in, as it were, wastelands, unprotected, and, you know, they're just sort of sitting there. The state doesn't look after them. They haven't been formalized. They haven't got, you know, a fence around them or anything like that. And then next door to those, what we would think of as being ancient ruins in the historical museum sense, are the more recent industrial ruins of the kind of economic turn within Eastern Europe more widely. And so you have these two different temporalities, and that's also something which wastelands recurrently offer us, is these multiple temporalities. Natural, historical, political. Yeah.
Thank you, Alex. Oh, thank you, Alex. Sorry. So, anyone else has more comments? Maybe if not, would you have a kind of like closing remarks on like how do you think the publicness of space sharing can actually, be kind of like expanded, or should it be expanded, or is it really a major concern now, do you think, or like what are the directions?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing I was thinking about is whether or not people who are in a position of vulnerability and are required to find communal ways of living with one another, whether there's a principle within that form of organization that's reflected more widely in other parts of, say, Indonesian society, and whether or not you can find a way to kind of get those if there are value systems there that can kind of cohere, or is it that we're always going to find contradictions when we walk into those environments?
I think it's more the second.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, but yeah, because like I think also it's related to our past discussion about how I think one of the last, I mean, some comment, one commentator said that actually, what is this lumpang as an Indonesian concept, and why is it presented here in Berlin, in a gallery in Berlin? And I mean, my answer was like, actually, it's not a solution. We also, it's an everyday word that is so sticky, have so many meanings, but what we, and by proposing this to the public of the radio, not just to Berlin's or German's public, is to kind of like more like open conversations, and it's far from giving any solutions to the problem of space.
Yeah.
But also kind of like framing the kind of, or try to frame the idea of sharing, actually, that it doesn't necessarily, you know, go towards the directions of what you have now in sharing economy or sharing as a nostalgic, romantic notion of it.
Yeah, and also just to, you know, highlight the fact that radio is such an appropriate medium for that kind of discussion, insofar as everyone that's listening to this will have different sounds in the background, and everyone will actually have a slightly different edit on this material itself. You know, the washing machine, the bus, the kid screaming in the background, the person saying, why are you still listening to this ridiculous radio program? You come and do some cooking or whatever. You know, so I really like that. I think radio works well, and I think this is a great platform for that exploration.
Okay, with that note, I would like to thank Alex Head for the opportunity, and also Alia and everyone else here in the IFA Gallery, and for all of our listeners at Radio Kunci, we wish you a very pleasant night, evening, and morning.
Good morning.
Bye.
Thank you.
Science.
To share with us food and drinks, and also if you want, also about sharing your idea, your ideals. We are doing this project also, so not in the real tangible space, but more online, about what would you like to share. And it's an ongoing project for the next 4 weeks, so you're more than welcome to write down your ideas and share what you would like to share around a glass of wine, water, and prosecco. Thank you very much.
Wait. So for announcement, for 26th of April, there will be another live event. Our third live event will feature Nuraini Juliastuti from Kunci with Read-In Collective, Annette Krauss and Hyung Joo-shun. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Science, deduktif, aktivis, energi, artis, disco, kopi, astronot, akses, bisnis, radio kunci.